Now, eczema affects one in five children in Ireland and one in 10 adults. We're joined in studio by Paul Herriot, who's no stranger to studios. You might recognise his voice from Lyric FM. Paul has lived with eczema since childhood. And we also have Professor Alan Irvine on the line, who's a consultant dermatologist at St James's Hospital and Children's Health Ireland. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm good, thanks, Ray. Thank you very much for having me on.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Ray. Thank you very much for having us.
So for people who've been lucky enough not to have eczema, how would you describe it to them, Paul?
Well, I'm here really through my association with the Irish Skin Foundation, I should say, sort of firstly. But my route to it was very, very typical in that as a child, I suffered, like a lot of children do, from asthma. And then that can leave a legacy of complaints such as atopic eczema. And that was part of the legacy. Unfortunately, where the asthma tends to pass with children or can do, the eczema, when it arrives, is a bit more permanent.
OK. And atopic eczema is sort of chronic eczema,
yes,
is it?
Yes, yes.
So how bad does it get for you, Paul?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to sort of really... I've never known from anything else, really. And I think when I was first aware of it, I'd probably been about six or something around that age. And I was just aware that I had very itchy, dry skin, and it was written off as that. And you were constantly being told not to scratch. Because
yes.
That's not a great social introduction to anyone, let's put it that way. And the truth is that you might as well tell a child with eczema not to blink. Mm. I mean, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to land. That is part of the condition. And that's the earliest experience with it. But as the years go on, it changes. It develops into something else, manifests into something else, and carries not only the social stigma and this unbearable itch above everything else, but it also carries a psychological cost with it as well, of course, because there's a stigma with this condition. Now, you don't know that as a child because you don't know from anything else. But as you go on, you become adolescent.
Is that because of red, flaky skin?
Absolutely. And I think it's probably worth pointing out, and a lot of people listening who have this complaint, maybe those who are coming to terms with it will agree, you are far more perhaps aware of it than the world around you. You make more of this.
Of course.
And it's something else to put in yourself. And today, I imagine, where we're in an even noisier environment and a much more visual environment with social media, and all the rest of it, there's even more pressure for perfection, and this is one step against that.
Alan, what causes eczema?
Yeah, so that's a complex question, Ray. It's a complex condition, and there's many things that drive it. There are issues with people's skin barrier, which is weaker and more susceptible to being driven towards inflammation. There's a hyperinflammatory response in the skin, so we have these responses in our skin. Really, to, you know, there's a so-called type 2 immunity that's designed to remove itchy things from our skin, you know, bugs and insects and so on in evolutionary times. But in eczema, that response is just permanently switched on. So people have this dreadful inflammation and incessant itch, as Paul has said. And then the third thing you get is increased infections, particularly with bugs. There's one bug called Staph aureus, is very common. And also a bug called herpes simplex, cold sore virus, is very common. So all of these things together at different times in a person's life will drive their eczema. Sometimes they've got allergies to external things as well, like grass pollens. So it's a really multifactorial thing. There's lots of different things feed into eczema, but the common things are inflammation that's really difficult to switch off. We're talking about moderate and severe eczema. And it's hard to switch off, deprivation of sleep, pain in the skin. Paul's talked about the consequences of that, the psychological consequences, the developmental consequences in kids as well who aren't sleeping, you know, on growth and on their general development. So it has a huge burden in people with severe disease. When we say 20% of people have it, of course not 20% of people have severe life kind of altering disease, but a number of people do.
So how many are we talking about?
Many people with severe...
Yes.
So
that's what you have, Paul. Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm at the more severe end of the spectrum.
So in the more severe end, we might have something in the region of 1,000 people in Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, who have... It's hard to guess because some people get disillusioned with medical care because they've lived so much of their life and they haven't had good solutions for their eczema, so they disappear a little bit, understandably. Mm. So it's hard to have really good data on how many people have eczema that's so severe that you would need to go on systemic therapies for it. But it's probably in the region of 1,000 or maybe slightly fewer people who would need to go on immune suppressing drugs or immune modulating drugs for this.
And Paul, you're nodding in agreement there. And you, one particular story about going to a radio award ceremony a few years ago, was it?
About 10 years ago.
10 years ago. And what happened?
I just remember going that night, and we were with a group of friends, and it was just one of those great nights out. And at that stage, when I moved into my 40s, in my mid-40s, at that age, it changed from being just something that you dealt with to something rather more serious. And just as Alan, as Professor Irvine there was saying, I think there's a certain element, maybe not, well, he didn't use the word denial, but of not being able to recognise the severity of your condition. And it wasn't until I looked at myself that night and looked at my clothes and they were covered with spots of blood and all sorts that I realised I've got to do something about this. This is really serious. And I was covering it up with other events going on in my life, so determined to get on with your life. I think 50% of the initial journey in dealing with this is actually admitting to yourself that you have it.
But what Alan said as well is that people are sort of tired of failed medical procedures that don't help them out.
Absolutely.
So what have you gone through? You've gone through
I have to say now, to be fair, I really, and particularly in Ireland, in this country, I have had the most superb help. When it really got out of control at that time, I was, my father in the North psychiatrist had referred me to a friend of his who said to me at that time, look, there's nothing I can do for you here. You have to have someone near to where you're living and working. It's that serious. And here are several names. I think these are the best in the country. And I will refer you to any of these
people.
You're
lucky, yes.
And I was particularly lucky, I think, to get Professor Sarah Rogers at St Vincent's at the time, who was the very first specialist that I had ever met, because things had changed greatly since my teenage years, obviously. Whole new way of thinking, a whole new way of dealing with the subject and of treating the patient, where you're empowered by a consultant saying to me, and for the very first time, they said, how do you feel? How do you actually feel about this? So, of course, I'd say, well, you know, it's fine at the minute. No, I'm not asking you about your eczema. I know all about that. I can see that. But how do you feel? And that is such an important, that was a great step forward for me.
And she said to you, you sound healthy, but you look shit.
Yes. She was a great listener, by the way, to Lyric at the time. Great late night listener to the Blue of the Night.
So you did this wet wrap treatment, which was like wrapping you in a sort of a medical
That was the first step for me, because it had got so out of hand. I'd finished with the steroidal route. And that's probably what Professor Irvine means when he says people tend to give up, because you started certainly at my in the mid-70s when I started dealing with it on steroidal treatments, topical treatments. And I think it's interesting with the skin, you know, it's our most prolific organ. And yet, you know, if it's the heart, if it's the kidneys, if it's the liver, something like that starts to give trouble, the alarm bells go off at once. If it's the skin, we can see it festering. We think, well, I'll put something on that. You know, it'll be fine. Yeah. Stop scratching. Pull yourself together. And of course, you can only go so far. And steroids, topical steroids, have to be handled very, very carefully. They thin the skin. They're very bad on the long term. So it was Professor Rogers who said to me, look, I'm taking you off work now, and I'm taking you into my day clinic, and we're going to give you wet wrapping for a week. Of course, I looked at her. I thought, have you gone mad? I said, we're going to wrap you up in bandages. This is probably the most ancient form and basic form of skin treatment. It's called the occlusal system of hydration. And it's wrapping you up in these emulsified bandages at a great temperature. And it takes a considerable number of nursing staff, devoted nursing staff, I may say. They were just amazing, who would boil these bandages up for you. They'd get you in there. They'd wrap you up on them, one for the legs, one for the torso, one for the neck, one for the arm. And I can only describe it as when you got up covered in this massive hot water, it was like getting out of a bath, except the bath came with you. And from there...
And what was the outcome then at the end
Well,
of the
after
5 days?
5 days of this moisturising and putting you into a very hot room for 5 hours so you don't suffer from hypothermia and the pores open, you get this. After only 4 days, I had an almost 100% cure rate. I used the word cure advisedly. It was Sarah Rogers who said to me at the time, look, You know, the good news is you've responded very well to this form of treatment here. But the bad news, I'm afraid, is it's only management. It's not permanent.
Okay.
And this is what we're talking about. Right. None of these treatments last.
Now, you say you're here as a sort of a spokesperson for the Irish Skin Foundation. Yeah. Professor Alan Nervine, like a lot of conditions, there's been a breakthrough in the last few years with the drug called dupilumab. Tell us about this.
So the way we used to treat people who had, you know, Paul's very eloquently described inpatient management of eczema, we for years used what we call repurposed drugs, so drugs that would come from, you know, cancer like methotrexate or organ transplant drugs like azathioprine or cyclosporine. They were never designed to treat eczema, but they were repurposed because literally there was nothing else that would give people relief, and they worked reasonably well for quite a number of people, and continue to be very useful agents. But what we've seen in the last number of years is therapies specifically designed and targeted towards the immune abnormalities in eczema. And dupilumab is just one of a number of drugs, but it's the first that's approved. It was approved in Europe in autumn 2017, and it targets just two chemical messengers called cytokines that are very abnormal in eczema, and therefore it protects the rest of the immune system. It doesn't block other essential immune...
How well does it work, Alan?
Sorry?
How well does it work?
It works better than any. It's transformative for many people. For about 80% of people, it transforms their lives. So we did some of the... We were involved in some of the drug trials in St. James's, and I still know and follow those patients 3 or 4 years later, and it is literally transformative in their lives. Their sleep, their relationships, their work, their quality of life just completely changes. So these are people who no longer use creams anymore, who sleep properly, who live full, active lives back in the workplace. So it truly is transformative. It's generally very safe. Some people get some red, itchy eyes, but by and large, it's a very well-tolerated drug. And in some ways, there's a huge Irish success component to this because most of the world's supply is made in Waterford, believe it or not. So that's something
I'm laughing,
that
Alan, because
extraordinarily good at.
I'm laughing because what's coming next? Because it's produced in Waterford, and yet Ireland and Greece are the only countries in Europe who haven't licensed it for reimbursement.
That's correct. We are, yeah. It's licensed in the north and has been for almost 2 years, but not in the south. So, you know, despite our incredible success at manufacturing this and in exporting it all around the world where patients are benefiting from it, people in Ireland can't benefit from it.
Isn't that mad?
That's a real source of frustration for my patients and for everyone's patients and for patients themselves. It's incredibly frustrating to know that we actually are brilliant at producing this, but it's off limits for our citizens.
Imagine if you live, and I'm sure there are one of those 1,000 people living in Waterford and probably aware of the fact that this particular drug that's transformative, as you say, is produced in a factory beside you, and yet you can't get your hands on it to change your life. That's beyond frustrating.
It is frustrating, and you have two sides. So we have this extraordinary success in producing these medicines, and that's a multi-decade thing, you know, from everything from the IDA and the Waterford Institute of Technology and all of these amazing graduates who go in. I think there's 850 people employed down there making this and other drugs. All fantastic jobs. We have a whole engineering sector, companies like Jacobs that build these vats where these medicines are made. And we truly are world leaders in that. And it just seems extraordinarily frustrating. It's like the child outside the sweet shop looking at sweets, and you just can't get them despite the fact that your dad is making them. You know, it's
And Paul, is this the NCPE again? Is this the National Centre for Pharmaeconomics? Have they not okayed it because it's too expensive, or what's the story?
Well, of course, everything's to do with economics at the end of the day, isn't it? And we know this through and through. I have, through my work with the Irish Skin Foundation, travelled a lot of the EADV conferences, the dermatological conferences, Global Skin and so on. And so I've given talks for some of the drug companies over the years. And of course, inevitably, they'll say to you at the end, if there'll be a 45-minute talk, wherever it is, Paris or Milan or Rome or Madrid recently. And at the end of it, there'll be, you know, a question and answer. And, you know, one of the things that they'll ask me is, what can we do for you? And I would say, well, of course, you could make it more affordable, which, yes, which there is inevitably probably sometimes a silence. But, you know, it is very hard to describe the kind of hope that this offers, because for people like myself who are about to start in this, and I'm very fortunate because I have compassionate access to it, and I was supposed to start at the turn of the year, and of course with COVID coming in,
and what qualifies you for compassionate?
Well, because access? I suppose worked with Global Skin and the Irish Skin Foundation over so many years, and also because I'd gone through wet wrapping, phototherapy, and so many of the other therapies and forms of therapy that lead to the eventual systemic treatment. I mean, that's where it's all headed, yeah, at the end of the day. The timing was right.
For you, yes. Yeah.
And so I was able to be offered it. But of course, why should I be one of the chosen few?
So the Irish Skin Foundation are advocating that this would be made available to everybody who needs it.
Absolutely. And yeah, I have seen the results, and it's very hard for me. Look, I'm even sort of scratching myself thinking, yes, about it in places, because I'm just about to start this now in the next few weeks or so. And it is very hard to imagine what it can possibly be like to get up in the morning, as people say they do in this drug, and not to have to manage your condition, or even in some cases.
So, at the moment,
do
you have to emulsify all the time? Is that what you have to
do? I have to think about it constantly and throughout the day, and what I'm going to wear.
Right. But,
and it's quite bad at the minute, because for me, we talk about the triggers, whatever that might be. Professor Irvine touched on the sort of contact triggers, the allergens, and so on. But for me, for example, one of the triggers can be great change in temperature, a drop in temperature, or indeed a rise in temperature if it's humid and muggy like it is at the minute.
So what happens next, Paul and Alan? How do you advocate to get this across the line?
Well, oh, sorry.
Go on. I don't mind. So to be fair, just to the NCPE, the NCPE did recommend it as fundable pending an economic assessment by the HSE, and I'm not sure it didn't get through that.
But, oh, so the NCPE recommended that the HSE reimburse people for it, and then it didn't get passed. The HSE.
Pending, yeah, there's always a rider with an NCPE recommendation that, you know, providing the economic, because they don't sign the checks,
yes,
but they,
yes, yeah,
they were happy with its effectiveness and happy that it would be reimbursable. And every reimbursement agency in Europe, with the exception of Greece, has reached that opinion, some very quickly. Like I actually helped with the National Institute for Clinical Excellence one in the UK, and was part of their review. And they're known for being parsimonious, cautious, careful, and certainly not fahulic with money. And they approved it 2 years ago on the basis, right, of similar applications. So it's frustrating to see where in our bureaucracy the stoppage is for its approval. So I know that from a medical point of view, the dermatology program has written strongly supporting this, because dermatologists who work it know how important this is to have this available. It's not going to be treating thousands and thousands of people, but for those who need it, it's really, truly transformative.
So, Alan, can I just clarify this? So it went to the NCPE, the National Centre for Pharmacoeconomics, and they said, yeah, this is good value for money.
Well, they say that they normally leave themselves a rider, you know, so they'll say that it's fundable pending and the economic realities,
okay,
which the HSE executive have to sign off on.
And they have
to. So they don't make a final decision,
okay,
whether to fund something or not. So it would be at the executive level, and I'm not sure the exact committee where it might be at the moment,
okay,
but there wasn't a rejection from that. And then it comes down to drug companies thrash out a price, and by and large, every other country's been able to reach an accommodation.
Okay.
Around
I'm
that.
Wondering. I'm wondering. I'm just. This is me thinking. I wonder: is the drug company who produced it down in Waterford and exported it to all around the world? I wonder: did they get any government grants or incentives?
Well, I don't know. I just don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Well, we'll watch this space. Hopefully, it'll be made available. We might talk to you again, Paul, when you're on the drug and you can tell us how transformed it's been.
Yes, the next 6 months will be interesting.
Okay. Professor Alan Irvine, thanks so much for talking to us today. Paul Herriot, thank you. We'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.